Good afternoon, everyone. The Labor, Industry, and Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. The meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is the custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wait, well, victory makes this part up. So you can focus on, you know.
And I apologize, members, my phone went off right after the Pledge of Allegiance. My kids told me I wasn't smart enough for a smartphone. They may be right. Before we get started, CLA Grace Doyle will please take the roll.
Chair Eklund?
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Present.
Representative Detmer? Representative McDonald?
Here.
Representative Berg? Representative Bliss? Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin?
Sundin, present.
Representative Detmer? Representative Berg? I think you might be muted. Representative Bliss?
Hello, that's me.
And we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from the January 20th, 2021 meeting. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Representative Poston, would you approve the minutes from the January 20th, 2021 meeting?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, this can be voice vote. All those in favor of adoption of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Minutes are adopted. Members, on our agenda today is House File 41 from Representative Frazier. I will move that House File 41 be laid over for further consideration. Now that the bill is before us, I will move adoption of the A2 Authors Amendment. Representative Frazier, would you like to describe the amendment before us?
Yes, the amendment essentially clarified the definition of employers, and then it also gave the ability of the Department of Labor and Industry to enforce this bill.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Are there any questions or comments on the A2 amendment? Seeing no comments, discussion on the A2 amendments, and nobody's requested a roll call, all those in favor of adopting the A2, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted, and now we have the bill before us. Because this amendment has been adopted, we will need to review the fiscal note for this bill before we move it on, which is why the original motion for this bill is to be laid over until we have the fiscal note. Any questions on that? Representative Frazier, please proceed with House File 41 as amended.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Eklund, Vice Chair Zhang, Rep. Detmer, Rep. McDonald, and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to have this bill, House File 41, the Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act, heard by this committee. This is my first bill presentation, and I am honored that it's a bill that is focused on our essential workers. I have several essential workers in my family, in healthcare, and other areas that have worked day in and day out throughout this pandemic to keep us all safe. As COVID-19 spread and states began to take actions to contain the spread, Congress took action to protect workers that would have their daily lives upended. Congress passed the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that provided funding for up to 2 weeks of paid sick days to address illness, quarantining, or caring for a family member. These actions were necessary to ensure that workers were able to take the time they needed to protect their own health and the health of their families and community members while maintaining their ties to employment and their income. However, there were exceptions that excluded all workers and businesses with more than 500 employees from any of the paid leave provisions. That meant, for example, workers who were employed in grocery store chains with more than 500 employees were not covered by paid leave protections, in spite of being essential workers who are potentially exposed to the coronavirus every time they report to work. Employers were also able to choose to exempt employees who are healthcare providers or emergency responders from the paid leave requirements, a category that the Department of Labor defined so broadly that it included not only healthcare providers, but also virtually anyone else who worked in any healthcare facility, from janitorial staff to cafeteria workers. The Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act will provide essential workers like nurses, care workers, custodial staff, food workers, and others with critical emergency COVID leave. This emergency leave will allow workers to quarantine, care for a loved one with COVID, and care for their children who are distance learning or if their child care provider is closed without financial burden. This will prevent essential workers from using their own PTO, sick time, or going without pay for shifts missed. This bill gives us a chance to follow through on our support for workers and provide them with some genuine relief. Chair Ekman, there are a few individuals here to testify, and I would now like the committee to have a chance to hear testimony from them. I can't see who's all on now, but I believe we're going to have Nurse Ashley Haverland.
Representative Frazier, I have the list of testifiers here okay. in front of me. Members, in this brave new world of Zoom, I would ask that you hold your questions till the testifiers are done, because the last committee I was in, it got a little bit out of hand right off the bat. So if members will please indulge the chair on this one. So first up is that I have on my list is Mary Turner, RN, North Memorial, and MNA President. Ms. Turner, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund and committee. My name is Mary C. Turner, and I am a COVID ICU nurse at North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. I'm also the elected president of Minnesota Nurses Association. I am proud to represent more than 22,000 registered nurses across North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. In Minnesota, we are 80% of all the bedside hospital nurses in the state. But recently, we are hearing from an unhealthy percentage of those nurses. Literally thousands of MNA registered nurses are telling us they are being hurt by this pandemic. We nurses know that everyone is sacrificing. We know that we are on the front line and more likely to be exposed to this vicious virus. What we didn't expect was that nurses and other essential workers would lose our hard-earned pay and benefits through no fault of our own. Nurses are having to quarantine and miss time at work, which is costing them days and weeks of pay. Nurses lose pay when they are exposed to a COVID positive patient and they cannot prove it happened at work. They lose pay when they have had to wait for a COVID test. They lose pay when they've had to wait for the test result, which can take as long as a week to come back. Nurses lose pay when they have to care for a COVID positive person at work, including their children. Nurses lose pay when they cannot access daycare for their kids, including when daycares have closed due to positive cases. Nurses lose pay when one of their patients is not tested in the hospital, or at least the first test comes back negative, but then it's positive, and they're quarantined as a precaution. Hospitals know this. Some have allowed nurses to essentially borrow sick time and earn it back later. But this is not everywhere, and it's no solution. Nurses have had to go deplete their savings, dip into the retirement, or just not go without a paycheck. They're struggling with their bills, their rent, and their mortgage. You know, we nurses didn't become nurses for gratitude. We don't expect thanks. We don't necessarily like being called heroes and angels. And we certainly don't expect a ticker tape parade when this pandemic is over. But from the beginning, the nurses have been on the front lines of this war against COVID. And believe me, we will be the last to leave the battlefield. However, we just don't want to lose our lives or our livelihoods because we are on the front lines. No frontline worker does. So let's make it right. Let's repay workers for what they lose during this pandemic. Let's enact House File 41, the Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. And will you be able to wait for any potential questions that may come?
Yes.
Right, I appreciate it. Next on the list of testifiers is Ashley Haverland, RN, from Purim Health, Sanford. Ms. Haverland, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Eklund and members of the committee, my name is Ashley Haverland, and I have been an RN for 6 years. I work at Perm Health, and I live in Perm with my family. Never in my life did I imagine I would be working amid a pandemic. With everything that we did not know about COVID-19, I was shocked to find out that even in rural Minnesota, we would be significantly affected. Despite the risks, my fellow nurses and I showed up to work anyways because it is our job to care for our community. We packed bags to bring to the hospital so that we could shower and change out of our scrubs, wipe down our cell phones, badges, chapsticks, you name it. We did this before we entered our homes because our greatest fear was spreading COVID-19 to our family. At the start of all of this, there were many kind words and headlines about 2020 being the year of the nurse. However, far too many of us are left in a financial bind in addition to the constant stress of caring for patients while potentially being exposed to this deadly disease. Because we were exempted from federal legislation, we were required to use our accrued time off when needing to quarantine while waiting for our test results to come back. This resulted in many lost hours or even going without pay. I worked 12-hour shifts, and that meant I would have to, if I missed 3 days of work, that meant I had to use 32 hours of PTO while I quarantined responsibly. The lack of support for essential workers like me and my colleagues fuels my advocacy for House File 41. Nurses are exposed to this virus for 8 to 16 hours per day, caring tirelessly for patients. I work in the emergency room, and this means that I am exposed to multiple patients per day that could in fact be carriers. I cannot stress enough how stressful it is fearing the worst while doing our best to follow the safety guidelines. Nurses took the oath of do no harm. In my perspective, that includes being honest when reporting to work. On multiple occasions, I called our infection control nurse to inform them that I did in fact have symptoms of COVID-19. I did this despite knowing I did not have enough time off to cover my missed shifts. I have been tested 6 times. 4 of those 6 times, my tests were sent out and took many days to get the results back. One of my tests was collected in Perm, sent to Fargo, then to Sioux Falls, and finally landed at the Mayo Clinic. Nurses are expected to be at the bedside of these patients, exposing themselves and their families. But who will take care of the patients when the nurses are sick? We still have mortgages, daycare, et cetera, the same bills as anyone else. I have a 17-month-old son who attends daycare. There have been 3 occurrences when I have had to miss work due to a daycare closure because they have had a COVID exposure or they are waiting a COVID test themselves. How will I provide care for him when I only have 5 hours of bank time off right now? How will I continue to pay my bills? I cannot rely on my family as they are busy with their work as well. What is a mother left to do? I will choose my family every time. Thankfully, I had coworkers who donated some shifts to me so that I could continue to draw a paycheck during this time off when I was allowed to return back to work. The lack of emergency leave has created a financial burden and unnecessary stress for essential workers who are taking care of Minnesotans during this pandemic. Healthcare workers are left to use our own time off to cover their mandatory leave, but we're running out and starting to go without pay. This leaves us to feel that we have been failed by the systems that we provide care in. Healthcare facilities should provide leave for COVID-19 and related illnesses, even if the test result is negative. This is a situation that many nurses have been in. We have a COVID exposure. We're then mandated to take time off while waiting for the test results. But if the test results as negative, we do not qualify for any assistance in missed work hours. We need more than kind words. We need action from legislature. House File 41 is needed for so many different reasons. Nurses are leaving the bedside because they fear that they will not be able to provide care for their own families. Without having emergency leave in place for essential workers, we are left with two options. Leave bedside nursing entirely to find a job that deals less with COVID exposure, or to present to work with COVID symptoms because you are out of paid time off and you must feed your family. This is not something that nurses are willing to do. We, the beloved frontline workers of Minnesota, demand action. We need the support you promised us at the beginning of this pandemic. We are tired. We are frustrated. We need help to continue to have the ability to provide for our families so that we can care for you, our patients. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Haviland. And the same question, you'll be able to stick around for a few minutes if there's questions. I appreciate it. Next on the list is Troy Bowman, SEIU Local 26. Mr. Bowman, if you'd please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, proceed. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Troy Bowman. I'm an essential worker, a janitor downtown at the Target store in downtown Minneapolis. I'm a member of the local SEIU 26. I'm here today to support this bill because I know what people are really facing in this current situation. Janitors and many other workers are unsung heroes. In this pandemic, we've been on the front lines, but we're still being left behind. Our job doesn't have the option of working from home. Every day I walk into my job, I'm leery of catching the virus because, you know, the virus is in the air. I've like thousands of other frontline workers that have had to be quarantined. I've had to be quarantined twice. Once because I was exposed to it, once because I did end up catching it and then testing positive for it. Once for 14 days, once for 21 days. It left me in a financial burden because, like I say, I was never, you know, paid for the time off or anything like that. The good thing about it was that the union did look out for me and give me a $300 check. I was able to collect unemployment for the first one, I was able to collect unemployment. The second time, I wasn't able to. So that made me, you know, behind on my bills, not able to pay my bills. And, you know, right now it's really frustrating that here we are, essential workers out here on the front line and unable to be paid for the work that we're out here doing to make others safe. I remember in the beginning of this, you know, that we were told that if you were off of work, that your employer would take care of you and reimburse you for the time off of work. Well, that never happened. And like I said, I feel again that we've just been left behind. I'm still struggling to catch up. This virus, we never asked for it. You know, we were just, it came on to us, you know. But I feel like we're being punished for the virus by not being paid and not able to pay our bills for being out there trying to protect others and trying to protect people from getting sick. You know, I could have taken the time off of work and went to work because, like I said, I was exposed to it. And at the time that I was exposed to it, I had asked my supervisor, I said to him, you know, well, what happens if we're exposed to this and we have to take the time off? Will we still get paid for this? Well, unfortunately, I found out my answer once I got it because I was not paid for it. I've already explained to you how I was paid for it. I just, like I said, I want you to pass this bill because, like I said, this is essential for us. I don't feel that we should be punished for quarantining And we should be paid back those hours that we've had to use in PTO time and the time that we have lost and the money that we have lost. And that's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Appreciate it. And if you can stick around, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Representative McDonald, I see your hand up. We got two more testifiers, and then we'll get to questions if that works. Next up is, and if I butcher your name, I apologize, Bill Arambargo, President, Education Support Professionals for the Mora School District. Mr. Arambargo, please identify yourself for the record. And again, I apologize if I got your name wrong.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. And no, you are spot on with the name. Good afternoon. My name is Bill Arambargo, and I represent 82 Education Support Professionals, ESPs, as the Union President of Local 1802A for Mora School District 332, located in Mora, Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you and share a few stories of how the COVID-19 pandemic has directly impacted our members. In March 2020, COVID-19 began to have an impact on our members. Several members either had an underlying health condition or had a family member in their home with one. In March, our administration handled the situation with care and understanding. The number one priority was the safety of our students and employees. And therefore, the employees were immediately released from working in the school and provided the opportunity to work from home. From March until the end of 2020 school year, not one ESP went without a paycheck, which we strongly supported and advocated for. As you may know, these members also worry about the increasing cost of healthcare premiums. Many ESP work just to pay their healthcare. The uncertainty of how work assignments were going to be completed just added to the stress and anxiety already present. Fast forward to the 2021 school year, COVID-19 was still impacting lives of our students and members. But unfortunately, our administration was not very receptive to allowing members to work from home. Not every position had work that could be easily accomplished remotely. Unfortunately, several members were required to stay home, quarantine after coming into contact to a positive case. One member required quarantine twice in 2 months. By this point, they had exhausted their federal COVID-19 paid leave provided under the CARES Act, as well as all of their personal and sick leave. This individual has told me that the situation of having to quarantine with no leave available has caused them to be homeless for a time, living in a house with no heat, electricity, or water. This all occurred during the month of December 2020. They had no way to pay for medication required by a disabled spouse, food to eat, or even gas, which would allow them to make it to appointments. When educators are required to quarantine, it was not because of anything they were doing wrong. They were doing everything right: social distancing, wearing a mask, washing hands, etc. However, even following these precautions, they were exposed either at work or in the community. Eventually, some members were provided an opportunity to work from home. Others, who were not as fortunate, were forced to use their personal leave, or if they had no personal leave, they were forced to go without a paycheck or receiving a reduced paycheck. The 100 hours of paid sick leave would be a tremendous benefit for these members who want to continue safely providing the first-class learning experience, nutritious meals, and other support our students need. Our support professionals are being asked to put themselves in harm's way, ensuring children receive a first-class learning experience and a nutritious meal every day school is in session. Educators are essential workers. Kids still need to learn. Medical personnel and first responders need to work. When Governor Walz mandated childcare operations in schools, education support professionals stepped up to the task and provided the much needed childcare. The COVID-19 vaccination program has shed some hope that there may be an end to the pandemic in sight. With the establishment of Governor Walz's pilot program for immunization of educators, I was fortunate enough to receive my first dose of the Moderna vaccine last Friday. We look forward to more educators being vaccinated. as we all want to get back into our schools, but only when it is safe to do so. Our elementary school did not even make it through the first week of kids in school without a positive case. We were notified on January 22nd that there had been a positive case identified. I ask that you please support this bill so that essential workers can continue to provide the critical services our students and families need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arambargo. Please stick around if you can for questions that may come.
Yes, sir.
Next on the list is Kimber Ralstead, CEO Administrator, North Shore Health in Grand Marais. Ms. Ralstead, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Kimber Ralstead, Administrator of North Shore Health in Grand Marais, and I am here to express my concerns about House File 41, and I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Hospital Association. North Shore Health is a small, rural, remote healthcare organization comprised of a 16-bed critical access hospital, a 37-bed skilled nursing facility, a home health agency, and an ambulance service, all located in Grand Marais. The next closest hospital is 80 miles away, and the next closest nursing home is 60 miles away. This legislation is attempting to address perceived inequities in federal legislation. In the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, when that was enacted, healthcare workers were excluded because they were vital, or as noted in this legislative title, essential in our response to COVID. My concerns with this proposed legislation are as follows. First, there are costs, both administrative and payout, associated with this legislation. Key to these costs is the retroactive application back to March 3rd of 2020. The retroactivity of this legislation will be administratively difficult to implement. We will need to review all time off and match to infection control and personnel records to attempt to determine if the time off meets the qualifications for emergency leave. In the past 10 months, rates of pay have changed, vacation, sick, or PTO time were used, often creating complexity in determining the expected new benefit to the employee. In addition, the potential tax implications of earnings from early in 2020 being paid in 2021 are mind-boggling, both for the employee and the employer. Second, this legislation is not granting an equal benefit to all of our dedicated employees, but only to a subset of our employees. North Shore Health has over 150 employees who have worked diligently during this pandemic to care for our nursing home residents, hospital patients, home care clients, and community members. Please know that in the early days of the pandemic, many of our department leaders worked for 3 months without a day off. You are proposing a benefit that is not able to be, or likely should not be able to be, used uniformly by all employees. Years of experience has shown me that paid sick leave time is often used by some employees, even if not for the reason intended. An additional 100 hours of paid leave for all employees would cost my organization over $525,000. This legislation is providing additional time away from work, but the pandemic is not over. And in addition to caring for COVID patients, our healthcare organizations have joined together to support the effort to vaccinate Minnesotans. It is essential that our employees are at work. When the peacetime emergency ends, there would likely be a number of employees who would rush to use this new mandated benefit within the 30 days before it expires. Finally, you are proposing an unfunded mandate for many organizations already facing a challenging financial year. While we understand there is a desire to recognize those who have worked so hard during the COVID pandemic, it should not just be for a subset of employees, and the expense cannot fall on already stretched hospitals and nursing homes. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ralstead. And I think it's just about a year ago the last time you and I saw each other, if I'm not mistaken. So it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
So we have a couple member questions so far, so I will call on Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Frazier, Just in regards to the nursing homes and long-term care and the cost that could prevail, do you have an estimate of the cost of on long-term care providers and our nursing homes?
Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. We currently do not have an estimate of that cost yet.
Members, I'll remind you that we go through the chair here on these questions and answers. That's okay. We're all new and figuring out Zoom. So, Fraser, I apologize. Could you repeat your answer?
Yeah, sorry, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. Currently, at the moment, we do not have an estimate of the cost for that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fraser, would you believe that it would be a very tough task for those businesses, the long-term care and the nursing homes, whose turnover rate is around 50%, to go back clear to March 20th to locate some of these employees that most likely have moved on, and now they'd have to have the arduous task of going back at a great expense to them to find employees that have turned around and been gone for close to a year? Now, do you think that is the best business practice?
Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. But what I do want to make sure is that we stay focused on the fact that we're trying to help our essential workers here. Those essential workers that worked during that time, likely many of them probably did have to take time off, and some may have had to take time off that they were not paid for. I don't want to let the position that this is something that may be unworkable from an administrative perspective have us lose sight of what we need to do for our essential workers that have been there day in and day out for us during this pandemic and will continue to be there.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fraser, you're exactly right. We definitely need to take care of our front end, first line responders. And there's been many programs that have. Well, I have many family members and friends that are first responders and on the front lines, and they're doing great work. But we do have many programs that have already helped. So I'm just asking a question. What is the problem with many employees that are providing additional paid sick leave already because of COVID relations and COVID-related reasons, you know, under the unemployment bill, under workman comp, under first responder relief? Have you talked to some of these employees and gathered when you put your bill together and found out if they were a recipient of some of these other measures? You know, for the last 8 special sessions, we passed legislation to help our first responders with aid when not working, when having to be in quarantine. Not only did Minnesota, but so did the federal government. So have you spoken to some of these first responders and front-end workers and found out really what the need is and if they have received other funding to help during this time?
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Chair. Representative McDonald, again, thank you for the follow-up. Yeah, you just heard from some of the individuals that work with these employers in the dire straits that they have been put in because the aid was not provided or there were not leave provisions provided for them. The fact of the matter is there were some employers that were very good about this, even employers that were not covered by the federal legislation that was passed. And I think we all think that that is great. And this bill is in no way meant to punish those employers that did the right thing. The idea is to capture and take care of those essential employees that were not taken care of during that time and to make sure that we also take care of them as we move forward because we're not out of this pandemic yet.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just to follow up, Mr. Chair. Representative Fraser, I fully recognize the importance of this legislation and there is probably a certain need for it. But what I have a problem on several parts of the bill, but especially going back retroactive, almost a year, I think that's a mistake. And very costly to businesses. Not to mention, it's such a broad scope. Who all qualifies under your bill? It's not just first responders. It's not just our front end response team, but it seems very, very broad. It could go back from restaurants, those who are in agriculture, electricity. It seems to be a bit too broad. Don't you believe that it would be best just to consolidate it and deal with our front first end responders, first line of defense, I guess, if you will?
Representative Fraser.
Chair, thank you. Representative McDonald, thank you again for that follow. I believe it's best that we not exclude any of our essential workers. I mean, the folks that you named are absolutely essential workers, but the folks that you also named that would possibly be excluded were also very important and essential to the work that was being done through the pandemic to provide services to our residents here in the state of Minnesota, via that as services in the restaurant area or any other essential area. So I don't think it's wise to exclude folks that were essential workers that we deemed essential to keep them day in and day out interacting with the public and having a chance to be exposed to COVID-19. I wouldn't want to exclude any of those folks. But what I will say is I hear absolutely the concerns that you're raising. And as this bill is working through the process, we are absolutely open to taking those considerations, taking those things into consideration. As again, like I said, this is to take care of our essential workers and not to harm employers that did the right thing in the first place.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fraser, thank you for that answer. Under your legislation, who is considered essential workers?
Representative Fraser.
The essential workers are those that are covered under the executive order. Let me get that number for you.
We can find the number, Representative.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. It's Executive Order 20-48, Representative McDonald. Thank you for that question as well.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to hog the screen time here, so just one last question in this section. In regards to our nursing homes and long-term care who are already struggling significantly, and their great employers are employing great employees who are doing God's work and taking care of the sick of the sick and of those who are COVID. And we certainly got to take care of them. And for the most part, our nursing homes and long-term care institutions have done just that. But this is a financial burden on them. They are struggling and on a limited budget. I am very concerned because I have heard from our nursing homes here and long-term care folks that are very concerned financially that this could devastate them. And they are the ones taking care of our loved ones and those who are in our nursing home and long-term care, in addition with our nurses. First responders. So I would imagine you spoke to some nursing homes and long-term care facilities and sought their guidance. Would that be a true statement?
Representative Fraser.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Eklund. Representative McDonald, again, thank you for that follow-up. I've absolutely taken those into consideration. And I'll tell you, in fact, within my district, in fact, just a few blocks away from my home, I jog past and walk past them nearly every day. We have two of the largest nursing home facilities within my district. We also had some of the largest death tolls within those. So I absolutely understand the plight that they're going through and the struggles that they have through this pandemic. And I absolutely taken that into consideration. But what I will add is that during the time that we were in the midst of this pandemic in the early days, that there were workers that were hesitant to identify that they had symptoms of COVID-19 because they did not have provisions in place to allow them to take the time off to protect themselves and protect their coworkers. But absolutely did not have the provisions in place that would allow them to stay home so they could have protected some of those residents in those nursing homes that were impacted by this pandemic. So absolutely, I have absolutely taken that into consideration. And again, I will note that and emphasize that this is, as we're working through this process, we're absolutely open to having conversations about those concerns. And just one more point with the retroactivity piece, for those that had things in place and were taking care of their workers with provisions similar to these are in this bill, they will not be penalized. Those hours that they provided will be counted toward what's in the bill.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fraser, thank you.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Next on the list is Representative Raleigh and then Representative Detmer. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. And Representative Fraser, absolutely. I think this is very important and we need to take care of our essential workers. I have two questions that are based on trying to make this a better bill. My first one is calling your attention through the chair to page 5, which is the retroactivity would be 5.15. It applies retroactively to all employees covered by this section as of March 13th, 2020. The question that I would have is retroactivity as a definition is the process of applying laws to events that took place earlier in its simplest form. We know through Krieger versus Benton in the Eighth Circuit Court of 1990 that U.S. jurisprudence doesn't favor retroactivity, and I fear that it would fail the attempts to call back to a law that would be retroactively implemented and be found unconstitutional due to Krieger versus Benton. Now, generally, the rules and regulations are in and of themselves not retroactive. So the applicability of these administrative rules and regulations by definition are limited to the time following their passage into law. And we know this from Hem versus Maurer, which is part of the 10th Circuit Court of Colorado in 2006. So the question that I've got is, if the statute is calling for retroactivity, and we know that that retroactivity is not looked at favorably by the courts throughout the land and here in Minnesota as well, is the statute, do you think it's strong enough by going back, and will we have enough information that we'd be able to provide to the courts that this would be able to survive a challenge when the statutes or regulations that are applied prior to the conduct of the bill being enacted is and has been found out of compliance with the Constitution underneath Monison versus the United States in 2008? And that's the first of two questions, please.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you for that question, Representative Riley. I want to focus back on here what we're trying to do. I appreciate you citing those court cases and the possible potential. Anyone can bring a lawsuit. I understand that, regardless of whether they think it's going to be successful or not, they could bring that. I hope that would not be the case because of the financial. That is also another financial burden. You've got to pay for those lawsuits, and they have to go through the process. But again, I want to focus this back to the real reason we're here, and the real reason this bill is here is because we had essential workers that were not taken care of. And we have essential workers moving forward, currently right now moving forward, that will not be taken care of if we don't do something to put some supports in place to take care of those essential workers. So I can appreciate you raising those concerns. And I think, again, we can take those into consideration in terms of the retroactivity piece. But I want to make sure we stay focused on the reason we're here.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, again, I want to emphasize that I'm on your side on this one, Representative. What I'm concerned about is if in one of the, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, I don't remember the testifier's name, but she spoke out against this particular bill due to the fact that in her organization it was going to cost over $500,000. To be able to administer this. And this goes to my second question, so I'll ask it in the way of an explanation as I'm going through. If her organization, and it seemed to be a smaller organization, is going to be facing $500,000 and other organizations would be facing something similar, I would worry that there would be enough of a density of population that a class action lawsuit may be entered by multiple organizations calling specifically to 5.15 of the retroactivity to March 13th, 2020. So let's think about how we could strengthen that or at least make it more applicable under a survivable area of the law. So the second part of my question, or my second question was related to the employers and the definition of the employers. This particular bill has 100 hours of retroactively available emergency leave. In your definitions, is that 100 hours per employee, per employer, or is it 100 hours in total for the employee? And how do we split that between an essential worker that may have two or three jobs that would be affected by this particular law, Mr. Chair?
Representative Frazier.
Representative Riley, thank you for that question as well. That would be for the employee with that particular employer to have those hours. And there is a breakdown. I don't have it the numbers right in front of me, but there is a breakdown in terms of that employee's hours with that employee. So it would be a de minimis effect in terms of how many hours they're actually working with that employer and how they are defined part-time, full-time with that employer. So it would not, so if what you're, I think kind of what you're getting is if there would be some type of extra added benefit if you have multiple employers. The calculation and formula put in place was designed to cover that issue.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. What I worry about, Representative, is, and I'm not casting aspersions on any employee that's out there, but what I would worry about is the administrative costs of being able to go back retroactively to March of 2020 and having an employee that works for multiple employers, through what mechanism will we as the government make sure that a single person does not claim multiple incidences out of this potential 100 hours of emergency leave? And again, I do not mean to cast any aspersions on an individual, but where there are loopholes, there will be insurrections. Let's put it that way. Mr. Chair.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Riley, for that. I'm confident that our systems that we have in place would be able to track to make sure that that individuals are not taken advantage in that way. And again, anyone can try that, but at this point, in the way I see this, I am trusting in our essential workers that they just want to be taken care of for the work that they've done, and that they will be truthful and honest with any retroactivity and back pay to cover the time that they would have missed without having any protections for themselves or their families.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as my favorite president said, trust with verification. And with that, Mr. Chair, I yield back.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this forward. As I also support our essential workers, and when I first looked at House File 41, I saw that it was a standalone version of Article 4, and I believe that the essential workers that I was thinking about are the healthcare workers and those working with that occupation. And I see you've made it with your amendment. You've made it much more broader, taking in many more. And I think we'll be waiting on a fiscal note, obviously. And if the fiscal note came back to where you're going to have to cut this back a bit, which of those essential workers are you going to cut back on?
Representative Frazier.
Representative Detmer, thank you for that question. Yes, the amendment did broaden, or the language did broaden the essential workers that we're covering. I think just the basic foundational reason for that is that we have many essential workers that were left out with provisions to protect their income, to allow them to take time off to take care of their families or take care of themselves and to protect themselves and protect their colleagues during this pandemic. And I just want to make sure that I'll tell you this, from my perspective, my lens, I am always going to try to be as inclusive as possible as opposed to exclusionary. So I will tell you, I can't speculate on which essential workers that I would want to cut out, because the idea is to be inclusive to our essential workers and just let them know that when we talk about supporting them and providing resources for them, that we mean that. And that's the way we're going to work toward with this bill.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Frazier. Yeah, I believe every person that's employed is an essential worker. You know, but if you look at all the different things that came down from the governor's office, he was bringing it one by one, one by two, whatever, and now he has a list of the essential workers that you just listed in subdivision one, where you define what an essential worker is, and you listed them all, but it might come to a point where we know as legislators that we might have to make a decision based on the amount of money available, which of the essential workers are going to be able to be, that we will be able to help. And you might find yourself in that position as the author of this bill.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Representative Devon. I appreciate you raising that and bringing that to my attention.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next up we have Representative Edelson, and then Greenman, and then Nelson after that. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. So thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this bill. This pandemic has been incredibly hard on workers. It's been hard on businesses. As somebody that's worked with both workers and businesses over the last 11 months, I've heard both sides of how this has been challenging. So what, as we approach, I mean, more than anything, I think this kind of emphasizes the fact that we need state paid sick leave. And it, you know, you look at states like Arizona and California and how they've done things like this, where they haven't had the same challenges as we're having right now. I'm very much a moderate. I want to listen to the businesses and I want to listen to the workers. And so I do hope as this bill goes along that we will try to work with employers as well to try to find, I mean, we don't want our businesses to go under either, but we want to make sure we're working with the employees because they shouldn't, it shouldn't be that, you know, I, and it's been, there was a doctor that was on the news that said, oh, you've been exposed, just take 2 weeks off. And I was like, well, easy for you to say that. Because if you're somebody that depends on your hourly wage, taking 2 weeks off is not, it will mean whether or not you can pay your rent. So I want to thank you for bringing this conversation to the table. It's something that, you know, it maybe makes some of us uncomfortable. The reality is we're policymakers and we need to make policy that, create policy that works for people. So thank you for bringing this.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Edelson. And I agree. So before I assume the position in the seat here in the state, House Representative, I sat on a city council. And so I saw this up close and personal with our local businesses here. And we did everything we could within our budget and within the resources we had to provide some relief for our small businesses. And we absolutely know the idea, you would not want those small businesses to go under. Without those small businesses, we don't have those jobs. Those employees don't have that work. So again, I'll reiterate that we are open to having conversations as this bill moves forward to figure out to figure out and hear those other voices. But again, just the focus is on making sure we provide what we need to provide for our essential workers.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier. What has the gap been since the federal government passed their bill that covered some workers but not these workers?
That is the retroactivity. Chair Eklund. Thank you. That is, yeah, you know, I'm so used to being in court where I just go once the question comes and I respond. So that would be back to the March date that the retroactivity back to. That is when the CARES Act and the FFCRA was passed and put into place. And so that's why the retroactivity goes back to that time.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's 10 months, if I have my time right, that these workers have been put in this position. And I will just say sort of from my personal experience, my younger sister is a nurse practitioner. She works with in long-term care facilities. And since March, she has come, since the pandemic hit, with stories of not just her, but the nurses and the nursing assistants, the home health aides, who have really shouldered the burden, the economic burden of this pandemic while caring for folks who are both struggling with the pandemic and those who are just at the end of their lives. And she, one of the things she said to me was, you know, I have a 4.5-year-old niece who is wonderful. But when Elliot has to quarantine, right, she is the last line of defense, both at the hospital and also at home. And so I really appreciate the bill. And I really think that that we don't have time to waste on making sure that these workers who are really at the front lines and nurses and health folks, but also all of those folks who are making sure that our economy still runs. So I just really appreciate it and know that there's lots of folks out there that are who are testified here today, but also who are on the probably listening out there. Thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you for sharing that, Representative Greenman.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm sitting here listening to the testimony, and I didn't realize we had so many facilities out there that are still using pen and paper and using paper to keep track of their hourly employees and their hours. I thought most of that would be on computers, and with computers, you can figure that information out fairly easily to go back and say, okay, employee X worked, and you pull up when they worked and the hours that they worked and the time that they had to take off because they were exposed. That should be fairly simple. It galls me that they talk about how difficult that is. The other thing as I listen to this that galls me is the one person that's a veiled accusation that if they get this benefit, that employees, and these are dedicated employees that are in the nurses, that are nurses and the care facilities, and the janitors and the people that work to keep those facilities running. I have a nephew that works at a hospital, and that's what he does. He's part of keeping the mechanical systems running. And he's in and out of COVID rooms all the time. And luckily, he was able to get his vaccine a couple weeks back. But there's a veiled accusation that these employees are going to cheat the system and claim benefits and claim hours and whatever that they didn't work to get my extra money. I mean, that galls me when I hear that. And like I said, it was thinly veiled by two individuals that had testified. And so I met Mr. Chair, members. This is important that we have these essential workers protected, give them the protection, because if they get sick and they no longer can work, we're not going to have anyone in those facilities to be able to take care of the patients. And so those hospitals and those nursing homes will go under because they won't have anybody there to do the work. So members, this is a good bill. Representative Frazier, thank you for bringing it forward, and I wholly support it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Bliss. You're muted, Representative Bliss.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, I appreciate the bill that's here. And Representative Nelson, you mentioned the frontline workers, and absolutely, I support protecting the frontline workers and the essential workers. I just happened to be reading through the executive order, and Representative Frazier, have you looked at what's defined as an essential worker? Under the governor's executive orders, I mean, I was reading them, and they range from flower delivery people to people supporting the bait industry. And I'm a resort owner. I like the people working in the bait industry. But that list is very extensive, very extensive. And again, and Representative Nelson, some of these businesses don't have an accountant that can just click a button and find how many hours somebody worked. That's the frontline worker at the till. I have a local gas station that has several employees. The owners actually work the till most of the time. They're actually there. And I don't know. I've never been in their back office. They probably have 8 to 10 employees. I don't know what if they have a computer system or not. We don't have internet where I live. So I don't know if they have it online or if they purchased it. They may still be doing it by paper and pencil. I don't know. That's not my decision. I'm not their business owner. But again, Representative Frazier, do you have an idea of how many jobs are covered under the essential worker definition?
Representative Frazier.
Representative Bliss, thank you for that question and for sharing those thoughts. I'm fortunate again, and I'm glad you mentioned that piece about the internet access. That's unfortunate you don't have broadband access out where you are. Another issue we need to work on. But no, I don't have an exact number for you about how many employees would be covered. But again, like I said, whenever I'm working with legislation or drafting a bill, I'm going to lean toward inclusion. And particularly in a case where we're talking about essential workers that were, in many cases, that they were allowed to and required to work during this time. And they couldn't say, I'm not coming into work. They lose their job. So they were there working, but they didn't have any protections to cover them if they were exposed to COVID-19 and had to quarantine, or they needed to care for a family member for the same reasons.
Representative Bliss. You're muted again, Representative.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Frazier, it was an unfair question to ask you the number of employees. However, the executive order does have a list, and I believe it's 11 pages long. Are you familiar with just the job descriptions of how many there are?
Representative Frazier.
I know that the list is broad. And again, I will say it's in line with the idea is to be inclusive and not exclusive.
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I don't see any other comment or member questions right now. I have a couple of comments. Ms. Haverland, Ms. Turner, as a former shift worker myself, thank you. All our shifts are a killer. The place that I retired from did not have any sick leave or those type of benefits. So I certainly understand where you're coming from. Even if your facilities do have sick leave, it does not take long on a 12-hour shift schedule to burn up whatever kind of time off you may have. So thank you for your comments. Also, the list of essential workers is broad, has been referenced here. And so we need to take that into account. But the reason it's broad is we've done our best in the state of Minnesota to keep essential industries running, to keep people off of unemployment, to keep people employed where we can. But in the same token, we need to make these folks, make sure they're safe. And Ms. Ralstead, I know you and I will have more comments as these things come along. Thank you for your work in Grand Marais and making sure that Cook County is stayed as healthy as it is. I think it's a shining star for what's happened in the rest of the state is showing how to do things right for this pandemic. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fraser, you know, I'm thinking back what Representative Edelson mentioned regarding the businesses. I'm sure this bill will be coming back when we get the fiscal notes and so forth. We'll be discussing this bill. And if you could maybe bring in more businesses, and I don't know how many businesses have you contacted?
Representative Frazier.
I don't have the exact number, but I have spoken with employers around this bill, and I've gotten pretty good feedback. And I've gotten feedback I've had them share with me what their concerns are around the bill.
Well, I think it would be
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair. I got everybody calling me too. Mr. Chair, Representative Fraser, I think it would be good for the committee. I know you said you've spoken to businesses. Maybe we should hear from these employers too to talk about what they're going through. And many of these employers, businesses aren't gonna be back. They're gone. So we need to really be careful here and making sure that we're taking care of our essential employees. As I mentioned before, everybody's essential, but as legislators, we're gonna have to make some decisions on what areas we can cover and based on the fiscal note that's gonna come in, how much we can afford and so forth. So that's a big decision that this committee has to make, and you as an author will have to make some of those decisions. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. And I will remind the members that this was posted, this bill hearing was posted in a week in advance. So the employers certainly had the time to make their comments. Ms. Ralstead, thank you again for as an employer in the healthcare industry. I appreciate that. Also members, there have been several letters and emails that the Administrator Reese has posted to this event. And we will take written testimony for 24 hours after this hearing is done for people that want to submit their records. As is happening with all the committees because of these Zoom meetings, we're making sure that we're getting as much information entered into the record as possible. Members, is there any other questions or comments on this bill? Seeing no further comments from the committee, House File 41 will be laid over at this time. Thank you for your work, Representative Frazier. Members and staff, our next meeting is tomorrow, January 27th, 2021. Today was kind of a dry run to see how things go, not a dry run. Today was a trial run, I should say, to see how having a bill introduction will go with on Zoom. Tomorrow we have three bills up, so be ready to go to work. If there's no other questions from the committee, we are adjourned.